Hello and welcome back to the Election Show podcast, the only podcast worth listening to, let's be frank, unless you're Mark that just listens to every podcast ever released to do with the electrical industry, of course.
And you do now like a podcast. I think I'm the only one who likes them more than you, to be honest.
No, I do like a podcast. I've listened to them now on travel time.
Yeah, same. I had a big journey down to London the other day, and there's not been many electricians' podcasts out, so I was listening to some of the fully charged ones.
Oh, they got podcasts though.
Yeah, they do. Got a very big podcast, got about 80,000 subscribers on YouTube, but a bit out of my normal wheelhouse of listening material, but it was all right.
I find them hard work, if I'm honest with you. I find them like that cult, isn't it? They're just unbearable at times. I find them unbearable anyway. It's almost like, I know it's been done a bit recently, it's almost like with this sort of EV. Renewables, not renewables so much. It's same with EVs. It's just like, it's almost like people are looking down their nose on people. And it's just like, relax a little bit about things and understand not everyone's in that position, this privileged, lovely financial position to just be able to afford these cars. And no point judging people. You know what I mean? I mean, the greenest thing you can do is not buy new. Simple as that. If you've got something that works, keep it.
That is so true. And you are right, there is a lot of that from the EV space where it is appearing to be, they cause a lot of arguments. Let's just leave it at that, I guess. But they're, even going to the Harrogate Fully Charged show, it was noticeable the number of people who have sprung up as EV experts, and they're asking for Patreon and sponsorship. Even Fully Charged, dude, they've got a Patreon page, and I think they're making about £8,000 a month. They're quite public about it. It's a lot of money that they're making through just talking about electric vehicles without really being experts in any of it, I dare to say.
No, it's just, I suppose, they're just consumer experts in terms of understanding what's there from a consumer point of view. But it's when they sort of, there's a few things that bother me, and this happens not uniquely to Fully Charged, but this happens quite a lot in sort of YouTube world, I think, or where that crossover from like the professional YouTubers is, where they can't offer a technical standpoint, so they'll go to people to bring, they'll bring people into the episode to offer that view. But generally, and I say generally, then people pay to be there, so they're using it as an advertisement for their business. And one thing I don't think Fully Charged do a lot of, you don't tend to see the P, like the product placement and that sort of thing. And I'm not sure where I think that's underhand, because I know full well that, like you say, they done a thing on heat pumps a little while ago. There's a whole series on this home heat pumps. And I know all the companies that are in there, they're all paid to be in there. They're all promoting their products. They wasn't coming from a point of offering the viewer anything other than a sales pitch of their product. That's all it was.
Yeah. And there is a disconnect, I think, between the installer network. I think you've had frustrations in trying to get a heat pump yourself from seeing some of the posts you've shared on Twitter, and speaking to some of the other people who are involved in the renewables space, from plumbers to electricians, there is a huge overwhelming demand from clients to get quotes, to have systems installed, and we're dealing with that, and it's really difficult dealing with the supply chain network, dealing with the customer inquiries. And that story's not been heard enough, I don't think, in the social media space, if you like. There's just all this chatter about how brilliant it is, how everyone needs to get installing it, pay me Patreon to talk about it, when the reality is it's not quite that straightforward.
Well, they're so far removed from reality. They've got no idea what it's like to be a normal person and have to try and organise just someone to come around and install a heat pump. They've never had to do it. They never will have to do it. They'll get someone around to do it for free, and they'll be top of their list to get it done to the best standard. And you know what I mean? It'll be all singing, all dancing, all bells and whistles. But in the reality, I mean, what frustrates me, I've got to the stage now where I'm sort of reading people on heat pumps and I'm going, all right, this is what I want to do, blah, blah, blah. I just want to say, listen, if you can't do it, or if you haven't got the time, just tell me now. I mean, let's not waste everyone's time, you know? And still people are going, no, I can do that. 2 weeks later, any news on that estimate? I'm still chasing. Like, oh yeah, I'm getting to run around a bit with the underfloor heating, but I've got everything else. I'll send it over to you. 2 days later, still ain't got it. Yeah,
like, and that's it.
So frustrating.
As a consumer, I get it. I think I would be equally frustrated. But I've got on my desk now today, I've got 16 solar proposals to put together, and they can take over an hour each. And these are works that we haven't necessarily got the green light on to even do. So it's one of those. I do get it when people are mixing in the day job of carrying out the installs and producing quotes. It's not that easy, and the demand is massive. And I think in the heat pump space, it's probably even bigger. We've also got the issue of trying to work it into older housing stock as well. So you've got an older property, I think, there, Neil, and trying to get a heat pump to work with that maybe isn't as straightforward as sticking it into a new build fresh off the design. So maybe there's complications there.
Yeah, I think there's certain things you have to do for the grant as well. So the government offering boiler upgrade screen grant of $5,000 towards the install and purchase or the complete cost or anything, which interestingly includes the emitters. So so my underfloor heating is classed as an emitter, so I won't pay the VAT. You don't pay VAT on it either. This is separate to the boiler upgrade scheme, so you don't pay VAT on all your emitters either. So whether that be upgrading your radiators or installing underfloor heating, it's classed as an emitter. So you don't pay VAT on that. But the boiler upgrade scheme is $5,000. There's things you've got to do. So you've got to have, energy rating certificate.
Is it called? Oh, the EPC, is it?
EPC, I think within a time frame.
It's a couple of years. I think it needs to be fairly recent.
I think it's a couple of years, but then you need to have completed all the recommendations on that. So the recommendations on IRs was cavity wall insulation and loft insulation, which we're going to do anyway. So you have to get that to qualify for the grant. Cavity wall insulation was done. We've done that. It was really easy. That company came out from Bristol and blew all this special polystyrene stuff inside and done it in a day. It's brilliant. But just everyone else we've gone to is just so difficult. And the thing is, they always start with but this one guy, really, really keen. I asked him about his workflow, what he's got booked up, and can he fit us in a reasonable time frame? What's reasonable? I'd say within 3 months is reasonable. You know what I mean? And yeah, very keen. And then, like you say, just as soon as the ball's back in their court, it's just go slow. Everything's go slow. If he said, be honest, yeah, it's going to take us a month to get these prices back. At least I know it's a month. But you said to me, you was really eager. You said to me you could handle it. And like you've fallen at the first waypoint, which is just getting a bloody quote out or an estimate out to us. We're not asking for quotes. We just ask for estimates at this stage. You know what I mean? Just so we can give someone an instruction and say, right, let's start the ball rolling.
Yeah, frustrating. It must be really frustrating. And speaking of things going on a bit of a gurgler, the elephant in the room just behind your head hanging out the ceiling there, how is that progressing?
I'd say I'm about 80% done with the rewire. So floorboards have been up, cables have been laid. Most of the data cabling's in now. 50 lighting circuits, 50. And because the Lutron system, for those who don't know, whereas you'd take one lighting circuit around the whole upstairs, for example, and switch them locally, the lighting circuit, every switch live really needs to go back to a central point. So if we've got in a bedroom two sets of down lighting that we want to switch independently of each other, and 5-amp circuit, that's going to be 3 circuits going back to the central point. And you've got that replicated in every single room. So, yeah, there's a lot of lighting circuits gone in, a lot of sockets. I still got to do the outside lighting, the outside of the building. It's quite a bit to do, to be fair, but the worst part, I've got all the boxes to chase in.
You've not saved the best till last.
Yeah. We've got to see things like put speakers in the corner. They all need a power supply. So I think upstairs we've got 40, 45 boxes. You know what I mean? It's just going to be hard work, but it is what it is, isn't it? I want this house the next 20, 30 years to be as I want it. So short-term pain for long-term happiness, hopefully.
With your lighting system, then, are you trying to get it so it's all kind of more automatic than being switched on and off as people are wandering around the place? Is that how it's going to work?
So, yeah. So it's basically sort of, a slimmed-down Lutron kit. So you've got the full Lutron system, which is what I was looking at, but that is extortionate money. Extortionate money. The way I say, for a house, I mean, it's a 4-bedroom house, detached, and for a Lutron panel to do what we wanted, the whole system was touching $40,000.
40?
That's without the installation. So, installation and commission of the Lutron system, but not my work. 40 grand, right? And do you know what really tipped me over the edge? Because I was sort of airing, oh, well, it was 30 grand, so but the entrance level was 30 grand. And when I was looking at it, I'm like, that's a lot of money. That's just extortionate. But then to get like the entrance level, they've got these, like these, for those who might know about the Lutron switches, it's like these switches that come, they've got these black scenes presets. They look pretty 70s, like almost like Bakelite sort of switch buttons. They look pretty shit. To get the next grade up, £330 each.
For a switch?
That's just to upgrade from the basic. £330 each for a nicer looking switch.
Wow.
When you start looking at you start, that was like another £9,000 in switch upgrades. I was like, nah. It's got to be a different way. They've got this thing called Lutron RA2 Select, RA2 Select. And it's basically a DPD. EFIX have got a few videos on it, actually. It's basically just an LED driver that communicates with a central hub. And you can get on and off switch drivers or dimmable drivers. You can get 0 to 10 volt controls. And this kit also speaks with like Sonos and stuff like that. So it's quite a good little kit. But the limit with them, the reason I didn't go that originally is because they've got a 100 device limit. And the time you think about it, you've got 50 lighting circuits, that's 50 devices. Then you've got the switch and repeater, that's 2 devices. All the switches are counted as a device. I think we're on about 87 devices when I looked at it again. So I'm going to go with that system, which would probably save around £30,000.
Enough for a new EV car.
Yeah, it's a big deal, isn't it? I mean, and to be honest, because I was getting a bit carried away with it. And in the end, I was like, I just want to switch my lights on and off in a nice way. Do you know what I mean? I was like, this is a bit silly, really. This is a little bit silly. So, and the thing is, all that costs is about buying the lights. Got to buy all the lights. You know, so, yeah, it's getting a bit silly. So, good thing about this, you can even buy, rather than do the 5-amp sockets, if you're doing a retrofit, you can buy a plug-in, like a plug-in extension lead. It's like a 1-meter extension lead. It's got the communicating device built in the extension lead. So you can plug it into a 13-amp socket, plug your lamp in, and then you can set your scenes to turn your lamp on and off or dim it. It's quite smart.
That's handy.
Yeah,
that's
quite handy. Smart little bit of kit, really. So that's what we're going with now. We've got the device limit down to under 100, and we can do that now. So that's the plan with that.
It's progressing then. It's nice to see you making progress. And you don't need to put SPDs in any smoke alarms if you're fitting them now. You can emit them.
Because I think didn't that come from the IET webinar original? They said it on the webinar, and I think they probably, or did he say, I think someone said they were, it wasn't required. Maybe they was thinking about the intent wasn't required, but the wording was pretty much saying that it was required, wasn't it?
That's it. It's trying to tell somebody why it isn't white, isn't it? But that's actually what they wrote in the book. So people interpreted that correctly. And I think they've had to admit that mistake now as a corrigendum. Everyone jumped all on that when it first came out. I was part of that gang with Sam. We did a little podcast on it. It turned out to be a bit of a much of a fuss over nothing, really, I think, when you look at it.
Yeah, I think so. I don't quite know what the driver was about that. Maybe it was contractors not being happy or confusion. I think the SPD thing's a bit of a sidetrack. The escape routes was a big issue. I'm not even sure how anyone could have complied with the original wording. It was such a all-encompassing word of protected escape routes, and no one really understood what a protected escape route was, who it's defined, who's responsible for it. We're getting this, it's probably an interesting conversation. We're going to this stage now where we're sort of, as electricians and electrical designers, we're now sort of crossing over with fire, responsible person for fire safety and all this sort of stuff. And I'm just like, this ain't our job. With all due respect, this is not our job. We're not paid to do it. We need this information presented to us. And I feel like the 18th edition was the first, certainly the second edition was the first, one of the best releases I've remembered, where it was sort of trying to look after the contractor and the installer and the designer and sort of saying, no, this issue is not your issue. You know what I mean? By all means, if it's highlighted, you've got to deal with it. But why are we? If it's a life saving device, why is it not designed to work correctly on a voltage system that could spike and spike up and down in the UK?
And so that's it. I think ultimately the Smirk alarms have a product standard where they've got, is it 2.5 kV surge protection built in the product standard? So whilst it's not quite as high as we would have in an SPD in a distribution board or a consumer unit, they're generally installed that far away from that position. They're going to be of limited effect anyway, aren't they? So yeah. It's one of those where you're relying on product standards. We've had this with RCDs, haven't we, as well, and testing of them. Mm. We need to accept that the product standards and the way that stuff's made is above and beyond what we can do from a BS7671 point of view.
And also you've got sort of RCDs, good chance to link with smoke. So they're supposed to be regularly tested. You know, so if it does suffer an overvoltage device, it leaves it worthless. And hopefully that's just highlighted the next time it's tested with the button once a month. You go, smoke detectors don't work anymore. You know what I mean? It's like, you got this, the end user's got to sort of take some responsibility of making sure they're maintaining their equipment, checking their equipment and that sort of stuff. And, you know, it's just that everything's chucked over our fence at the moment. Everything seems to be, the installer's got to install, do everything, you know. Oh, the EV chargers, they make a device, we can put all this stuff in. Yeah, but none of it complies. And it's like, guess what? You signed a certificate, it's now your fault. It's like, just leave it to us. Just piss off. Do you know what I mean?
So I've got that. I've got that now with batteries on solar PV systems and the whole discussion over putting them in lofts and stuff and the product standards around the development of these battery systems and what we know as electricians working with batteries as we have for long enough with UPS systems and such. So it's interesting to try and pick out what's important and what isn't with that.
I'm snoring. No, it's hard. I suppose with the batteries, the world of batteries and all there is, there's everyone offering batteries. There is everyone you've heard, everyone you've never heard of, and their auntie offering batteries. You know what I mean? They're coming out. I mean, there's stuff on LinkedIn. I see some, like, this stuff's kind of freaking every nerd. I don't know. You think, oh my God, they're giving away, literally giving away for nothing. Not nothing, but in battery world terms, nothing. And I just see this battery. I think the battery is going to be one of them, the new consumer unit of the old, and it's going to get cheaper and cheaper and cheaper and cheaper and cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. And people are going to start DIYing it, hot wiring it. I think they already do. You know what I mean? They're so plug and play. And people just do what they want with it. And I think there's going to be some catastrophic accidents going forward. I mean, you don't even put... I tried to think about this the other day, and I was thinking, where would I put it? The way I'd see it, with an inverter and a battery, if you wouldn't put a consumer unit there, you shouldn't be putting them items there. You wouldn't put a consumer unit in the loft, would you? Without proper access.
No.
But I also get what you're saying in terms of, well, you're in this world, and also, what do you walk away from every job? It's a battle, isn't it? It's a real battle.
It is. It's a battle between safety, performance, and also trying to offer these things to people who are going to get use from them at the end of the day. And the UK housing stock isn't really set up with lots of storage space. We can barely fit consumer units in places, which is why you see them above front doors, in kitchen cupboards, under stairs, and all these other weird and wonderful places we like to try and mount our equipment that needs regular maintenance and user interaction. So we're already struggling. And you look at the size of an inverter and a battery. It's a tricky one. It really is. Because if you're putting it in the loft, the performance of the battery is going to be reduced. So is its potential working lifespan. There's all those factors outside of safety and fire. And my primary worry with the batteries at the minute is fire reaching them rather than them starting the fire, if you like. So if you're putting it in somebody's hallway, for example, or you're putting it in the loft space, it's far more likely you're going to have a white goods fire in your house and it could eventually reach that battery and cause a real problem. Going back to the smoke alarms again, and you look at the fire stats, I think they're saying that in 30% of cases smoke alarms are in use, they don't actually work. They've had the batteries removed or they've been physically damaged by the occupants, which is just crazy. So yeah, there's a lot of improvements we need to make in fire safety as a whole, but that's outside our wheelhouse as electricians. This is more an educational thing of society, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I suppose it's just, there's always going to be electricity. It just annoys me when people put themselves out there. We are the best. We really care. And they're just chucking them up in lofts and going, well, the customer says it's all I want it. Well, since when did the customer choose what's safe? When did that discussion, like, when did that start? Customer said they're not going to pay for RCDs. All right, then. What? Do you know what I mean? It's such a nonsense discussion. It's like, it is a legitimate, I can't see. It's so easy because I'm not in the world of having to price and install and put them in, but I don't think I've... Would there ever be a situation I put them in a loft? Just think about this. If it was boarded, if it was proper access, fireboarded below. But yeah, maybe smoke detection linked, you know what I mean?
Maybe I've been sat having these thoughts, and my current position is we won't do it, but obviously we're in the business now of trying to install solar systems. So I've been trying to engineer a way in my own mind I might be happy with, and I've gone around in circles of building little rooms in lofts out of concrete fireboard and putting some external ventilation into outside. So there's maybe a little fan external to that building that's blowing fresh air in, because, you know, you're trying to keep humidity down as well in the loft. It's not just the temperature. These batteries like, you know, a regular constant state of temperature, humidity. They like it when it's like that. And in a loft, you get such a vast change during a 24-hour period of the moisture content in the air that's in the loft, the temperatures. It's really tricky to engineer it in so it's safe. And outside of all of that, been able to safely get it up there as a team of installers, because these things are really, really heavy. So you can't realistically be doing it through a loft hatch and ladders, in my opinion. It's difficult to set winches up to start moving stuff internal to someone's house. So there's that aspect as well. It's not straightforward. It really is quite difficult.
Yeah, no, it's difficult. And that's the other thing, the structural element of it. I mean, how many times, because it's quite a small footprint, isn't it? You start putting probably at least 40, 50 kilos.
They're 80 kilos on average for a 5-6 kilowatt module.
With zero structural input. I don't care what you say, no electricians putting structural calculations together. They'd have to go to a specialist. And I do wonder if you actually said, well, we're going to span it across two joists, 80 kilos, plus the person working on it, another 150 kilos. Is that safe?
And that's just one 5-6 kilowatt battery module. If someone's going for a 15 kilowatt system, you've got to get the batteries quite close together. It's the nature of how they wire together and work. You know, you've got that issue. If you're going to hang it off the wall, off a gable wall, what about the weight sitting on that? It's not straightforward.
Yeah. And in terms of new builds as well, I wonder sort of where NHBC would stand with that and warranties and all that sort of stuff. We didn't allow you to put that stuff in there. What are you talking about? You had a fire, stand at you, mate. Or I wonder what insurance companies would say, home insurance companies. That's the key, isn't it?
It is.
I wonder that.
When I approached my insurer about having solar system and battery storage in my house, they actually wanted to see the technical spec of the product and see that it was on the MCS approved register of materials for a solar PV system. So they did ask that question. You are supposed to declare it. So they're clearly taking notice. And I guess it's the same with an EV car, isn't it? The insurance tends to be a little bit higher, I think, because of all the tech that's in it and the cost of repairing it after it's been in an accident.
Yeah, and highly likely to be a write-off, smaller incidents, because you start damaging that battery pack. Who's going to pay 20, 30 grand to replace a battery pack? You know what I mean?
Exactly that. I am also conscious that talking about this all the time might be scaremongering people away from having them. I've got great benefit of a battery in my house. We've currently been totally green for about 6 days solid now in all this sunshine. That's the really exciting thing for me.
Yeah, no, I'm getting one regardless. I'm bought into the technology, but it's just a good debate. I'm lucky I've got the ability to have it in the garage. I'm lucky like that. I've got that. I haven't got to have that same, and I'm doing a refurbishment, so I can get the cables from A to B now. If it was all decorated and I wanted to retrofit it, would I be going to chuck it in the loft, mate? That's probably, do you know what I mean? It's just the reality of life, isn't it? You start trying to offset your risk and going, well, I'll chuck a smoke detector up there, I'll board it. I do all this sort of stuff we spoke about earlier and trying to make it justify in my head that I've sort of got that balance, you know, because no one's ever, I mean, if you want total risk free from a battery, don't buy a battery.
Yeah.
You want total risk free from electrics, don't install electrics in your house. You know what I mean? So as soon as we decide to do these things, we start trying to edge in, don't we? I always say the safest way of not doing a job is don't do it.
So the totally.
We decide to go to a job, there's an element of risk imported, and we just try and do it as safely as possible. But
I think that thing you often state about this the risk profile, isn't it? There's that risk line, and where you sit on that is, you know, how it plays out as installers and consumers. We all have those things, don't we, that we're happy to work within. And it is a tricky one, but the benefits are huge for people. There's loads of safety products that you can fit into solar and battery systems. You shared one over on Twitter yesterday, that Give Energy DC isolator module that they have. I've come across some third-party products as well that will shut the DC cabling down in the loft in the event of a AC dropout or a firefighter operating a switch. There's automatic ABC fire extinguishers, which are really useful in and around.
I think it goes off by accident.
Well, we've been fitting them, and I knocked into one when it was mounted in a customer's property, and my heart nearly fell out because that is not a place you want to be.
No, you definitely don't want to be there. Well, I'm more worried about it. You can get wet all you like. I mean, I don't spoil my $9,000.
It totally. I won't be bothered about getting mucky and wet myself. It's having like $5,000 worth of equipment written off before it's even switched on. Scary, isn't it? But I think it's important, if the worst is to happen and a fire's in close proximity to those things, coating them in something that's going to stop them then contributing to it. I think it's sensible, but it's tricky. The DC isolators was a good thing for me, because having those live cables running through a building that's potentially on fire makes sense for firefighters, really, if they're going to get entangled potentially or been working inside spraying water around and stuff, knowing that the only thing that's live is on the roof. I think that's a good place to put it.
Yeah, no, I don't. I think there are some good options out there. I'm going to have a look about what to do in my house, because I'm not quite sure. And I was even thinking about maybe once I'm inviting the local fire brigade round, say, look, this is what we've done. But I just wonder what their procedure is. Their procedure is probably just come in, pull the main head, and just go with it. And I suppose that's why that give energy thing works so well, because they can pull the main head. That's it. We'll see a drop off and just cut everything, which is it's very good, actually. Very, very good.
It is. It's making it still behave itself when you're running in island mode. That's the tricky bit. And that's where the Give Energy one integrates so well, because it understands when that's happening and when there's actually been an emergency shutdown. Yeah, the ones I've used as well, I can't remember what they're called now, but that does the same. So if you've actually switched into the EPS state, it throws a little relay over and understand that's so what's happening. So it'll still allow the solar panels to generate. Because of course, when you're in that mode, you want your solar panels to keep running, to run your house. But equally, when somebody's pulled the main AC supply, not for that purpose, you want it to shut down automatically.
Mind you, I don't think many inverters work that way, in terms of, unless you've got battery storage, they won't run your house on a power cut, will they?
No, mine doesn't, unless I manually switch it over via the changeover switch. It'll swap to an emergency power supply.
Through the battery though, isn't it? Not for the inverter. Yeah.
It'll run from the battery, but it will still top the battery up through the solar as well at the same time. So you are limited to the charge rate of the battery, but the solar energy will still go into that at the same time as running your house.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you need the battery for that system as well. I don't think if you've got no battery, you have to have a special off-grid inverter for it to continue working. Because obviously, yes, once the power goes, the power to the inverter's gone off. So yeah, that sort of lockout sort of standoff, didn't you, where there's no power to the inverter to turn it into DC.
That's where the Tesla Powerwall and the new Give Energy stuff that you're waiting on, I think, is exciting, because it does all that by itself, doesn't it, I think?
Did you see they said a tweet yesterday? They said hashtag...
I've heard it's coming out 1st of June. I don't know how true that is.
So I'm hoping they're going to release something soon. That'd be awesome. I think that's going to be a big issue for my energy, personally, because I think that is going to be the one to have, without a doubt. But again, we've been here before, saying you've got it coming out, giving it a date is one thing. Actually delivering it to consumers, installers to use, is another thing totally.
It is. And My Energy, again, I think it was Jordy Brompton, had a tweet out herself the other day saying Libby soon with excited eyes emoji. But it's like, we've been hearing this for a long time now. There's installers who spec this equipment to customers and they're waiting for it to finish off their installs, which isn't fantastic. And did you see the news about My Energy as well last week with the layoffs that they're doing?
Before we go into that, Miles, we'll just have a chat with me. So I'm just wondering, off the top of my head now, I wonder whether there was an issue with, because this announcement, obviously, this My Energy is saying that they've got an imminent release coming out of the battery, not ready to ship. I wonder whether that was linked to the version one of the Zappy, trying to get that work together. Because that just seems to have coincided in 2 weeks or 1 week of each other. And I wonder whether they just went, you know what, this is costing us too much in delays, not getting this out. We've got to just bite the bullet and get rid of it and just offer this as an incentive and try and get these shipped.
That's such a good point. And that's kind of what logic would tell you. That's kind of what I would think based on the email you received about upgrading your Zappy and then the the release of Libby. You wonder if all the software they've been working on has been trying to get those two things to play nice, and they've just not been able to get it over the line. Rather than upgrading the Zappy V1 itself, you wonder if they couldn't have an add-on module or something, like a little hub or box that would join the two bits together. Not ideal, but a better way of approaching it than having to uninstall an EV charge point that is essentially functioning and working just because of a software issue.
Yeah, but I suppose I'm just trying to think out loud now. I suppose from their point of view, they're like, well, if you're going to spend X amount on a Libby, then maybe another 200-300 quid is not the end of the world for someone. You know, I don't need to change mine because I ain't getting a Libby, so okay, this. I mean, I wouldn't have tried everything, but I just sort of, and the thing is, we're speculating, we don't got a clue, but if it was because of that, I think it would be better for them just to say, look, we have tried, this does not, we cannot get this working, this is what we're going to do about it. It happens.
Yeah, transparency and honesty with your customers and installers is so important because those relationships are so quickly lost.
How can they install it for 140 quid?
Yeah.
Like, this is what bugs me about installers. And I'm sorry, mind you, same as all the rest of them. They just want, they're trying to go direct to consumer as an expert. You're not installation experts. Why do I have to attend your Mickey Mouse training to wire a terminal into terminal blocks? Why do I have to do that? You know, I sat on the Give Energy training. Absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous to sit there and just get told how to wire into free turn of live neutral earth. It's like, there was no design, no electrical design. Why should there be? Should we qualify electricians? There was no formal qualification check. Any old sod can go on there.
Mm.
And they're all the same. And so, but people will feel confident going to Give Energy. They'll feel confident going to Tesla. They'll feel confident going to My Energy. Oh, we're getting My Energy installed. No, you're not. You're just getting someone like me or Mark or someone else just turning up and just done their product installing and going off. Oh, want to see a copy of the 18th edition? Yeah, any else sort of pass that, mate. No problem at all.
That's so true. You're not going to guarantee quality by approaching any big brand in the EV or battery solar space. It's just not happening. And you're right, the training that they provide, it's much better, I think, if they give us the technical spec and how this stuff works and maybe a bit of training on the commissioning and getting it to connect to the internet and things like that. That's useful to us as installers, what the actual rated output of this stuff is when it's in a charging state and when it's discharging, all that kind of stuff's really, really helpful. And the technical training that they're trying to give out is rubbish. I had Hypervolt try and send us to go and swap a EV charge point that had gone faulty for, it was £120. And it was like a 2-hour drive near enough in each direction. It's like, what planet are you on to think that's a reasonable rate?
I bet that was like, and you should thank us nicely for this work we're giving you.
Yeah, I think the email said our shared customer. So they tried to make it out, I thought, in the outset that it was one of our jobs. It wasn't. It was another installer's jobs who they'd gone bust. So they were trying to get us to cover it off for them because their product... The product had gone faulty for 120 quid and there was no negotiation on that price. It was either, if you are not accepting it, we'll just get another installer who will. And yeah, that was their approach, which is not really putting the customer first, in my opinion.
No, it's not at all. And this is just, it's just providing more arsenal to the race to the bottom. Just you're not employing qualified tradespeople. I'm guessing here, do these people do any insurance checks? Any sort of anything like that?
No, to be a Hypervolt improved installer, I think they just wanted to see that at the time we were on the ERZEV register. I think that was all they were bothered about.
No, it's just ridiculous. And there's these people, all these companies say they care, and it's like, yeah, they don't. Well, they don't, that's not fair. But they've got one fundamental driver, and that's the shareholders. End of story. You know, I see what you said about this manager making his job cuts, and you think there's so many. Caveat, neither of us actually have a clue what's going on.
Wild speculation.
So yeah, it's just like, I can understand why that's happened, or I can not understand, I can see why that's happened, in my opinion, because it's like, everyone you speak to, EV installations has dropped off a cliff. That's not just My Energy. I mean, everyone, no one's installed it. Oh, all of a sudden, this great new charge that we're installing. They're all much and muchness. Give Energy haven't got one yet, but they've got one imminently, apparently, but they've come late to the game. You know what I mean? Why that takes so long to make that is just beyond me. But so everyone's trying to now plug into this ecosystem thing, and just, I don't think £350 grant would ever be the reason for people not all of a sudden installing EV chargers. I think people have just run out of first-time EV chargers to install.
Once you've got one,
you ain't going to replace it, are you? Unless it's broken.
No, that's probably a strong driving factor that there is the hardcore EV fan people, if you like, or people who are into their EVs and they've already got the charge points installed, as you've said, and now they're trying to pitch at regular consumers, and it's such a competitive market space, and generally those people are looking on price more than anything, and the Zappi, for example, is on the more expensive side. You've got new brands coming in, as you've said, Solar Edge are bringing out an EV charge point as well. I think Matty have got one coming out, G-Wiz as well. There's lots of these massive international powerhouses alongside smaller companies that are really innovating to grow their product range. So it is tricky for them. And I think MyEnergy definitely had a massive recruitment drive when things were taking off, whether it was to do with the grants or the thirst for EVs at that time. And they maybe have ended up with a top heavy employee count. They're quite local to us. They're always in the local news for employing people, one of the fastest growing companies in the UK, all that great stuff. It's brilliant. So yeah. A British firm, especially in Grimsby, which is quite a poor area. It's like proper old school working class town on the coast up in Lincolnshire. And what they've done up there is incredible. But yeah, you wonder if this investment they've recently had came with caveats about directors on the board and looking at the employee headcount as a trade-off for getting that money. I wonder if that's maybe what's happened. And again, just speculation. We've got no idea.
Yeah. No, I do wonder. I imagine it comes down to cold, hard cash and that this is we don't need the workforce now to deliver the work we're going into. Most of it's made in China. That's just the reality of it. They knew what they're going into will be shipped in from China. So I'm sure that's not through, like, sure they don't wish to do that. They'd love to make it in-house, but the realities of the marketplace is just that's where it comes from. So they're not selling as many Zappies and Eddies and whatever the other one is. Harvey. Yeah, they're probably not sending as many of them now, so they don't need all these people to do it. Just cold hard. I'd hope their new premises is not too big, because that's going to be expensive.
I think they just got a massive new production facility, so maybe that aspect as well as more automation. Maybe it is hard to say. There was was it British Battery or whatever that they were setting up in the northeast somewhere, Brit Bat or whatever they were called, and that's all stopped. Yeah. It's all stopped now, hasn't it? So we're going to have a go at manufacturing batteries in the UK. Maybe we need to look at that and start producing some more of the actual components for these things on our very aisles than shipping it all across the planet.
Yeah, these things are all very well said. But when people have to pay extra for it, I just don't want to do it. If I go to a sweatshop in China and have it all imported.
That's the way it goes, isn't it?
Yeah, and this is the reality. We've all been guilty of that. I'm not speaking from any sort of moral high ground, you know what I mean? Money talks, and but at the same time, also not preaching about shit, not preaching that people should be doing this, people should be doing that. You know what I mean? The fact is that you say you're a British band and now you're importing from China. Fact. You can never say you're a British manufacturing company anymore in terms of holistically, you know, which is, I think, they come across quite holier than thou sometimes. And I wonder how many of the dancers will be on that redundancy list. It is
a tricky one, because it's probably going to be the people at the, you know, what you might call the coal face of production and actually manufacturing output, you would guess, rather than maybe some of the show and pizzazz or whatever we're going to call it that MyEnergy do. And they are absolutely everywhere. Fully charged, they had a massive stand on that. Can't have come cheap. They pay a lot of the electrical influencers. Without naming them, the YouTube channels are well supported by MyEnergy and things like that. So you wonder if they're going to be cutting back in those places, or if it's all about that pizzazz and public profile out in industry. You wonder what value they get from that, really.
Yeah, I do wonder. So for me, I've been quite a fan of theirs. Spent a lot of money, not a lot of money, but spent a bit of money on them at my old house. But what really started to sway me towards going, is this a company I want to sort of use for my personal expenditure? It was when I went to Solar and Storage Live last year, and they had this, again, fancy setup, looked amazing, loads of people there, all very looking good. And when you sort of asked them about the product, they didn't actually know the product. They didn't know. They didn't have any technical knowledge. They didn't have any understanding of what it could do, what it couldn't do. And I kept having to make phone calls back to their technical helpline. I was like, you're at a trades event. This is not a consumer's event. It's a trades event. And you haven't got anyone here who understands the product. It's quite, I thought that was poor. And people I did speak to, it was all family members of people. And I thought, oh, so it was just make jobs for your family and friends. It was, I'm married to so-and-so's sister or so-and-so. Like, oh, okay. So you're all friends then. It's just a jolly up out. It's a jolly day out, is it? You know what I mean? So I was just like, oh, that's a bit disappointing. But then,
yeah, I mean,
was just the same, because they were making promises of the all-in-one being out in January. It didn't come out.
That's it. It's not unique to just my energy, is it? It's one of those, I think, where when you go into a trade show and you're speaking to people who know a bit about a product on a technical level, you need people there who understand it. And maybe that's the journey my energy on. They've gone from this place where they're speaking to people who are interested in the consumer aspect and the show and the eco-worthiness of all of this stuff. Mm. And now they're pitching the product to regular consumers because that market's done. They've sold to that now. And it's not something that you're replacing every 5 or 6 years. This is something that's going to be on your wall maybe a decade before it gets changed.
Yeah.
Now those conversations are a lot more difficult, and they maybe often just change their business model. I'm sure they'll get it right. They've done pretty well over the last 5, 6 years, to be fair to them.
Yeah, no, they've smashed it, and I wish them all the best. I wish everyone all the best, really. The more stronger British based brands there are in the market, the better it is for us as installers and consumers, you know. A healthy marketplace is full of options, isn't it? So
it is.
Change the subject completely. So, taking on a new apprentice, and he's claiming he's third year apprentice, right? This is nothing against him, he's a great kid. But again, the system annoys me. So, I've gone to the MyECS JRB portal as an employer. I'm starting to look at it. He's got his information, got his photo up there, got his information up there. From now, I'm trying to go through the grading system to get him graded so I can agree a rate with him, right? And he sent me a summary sheet of what he's passed, this, that, and the other. So I can't. The employer's portal is very, very, not clunky. It's very, looks very amazing. But have you ever used it?
Nah, not used that one.
Asks things that don't make sense. Like, it's just ridiculous questions. I'm like, what? But one of the questions is like, so as I'm taking as a new point, the question is, the first question I've got to do is, it talks like he's talking to him. So he says, do you want to complete your apprenticeship? And I'm like, the answer's no. So I tick no. Next. And it goes, you must sign a bit of paper and tell us you don't want to. What? I've never got a sign saying I don't want to. Why? Why have I got to do that? That's ridiculous. It's annoying. So I thought, it must be yes, then. It must be yes, I do want to complete it. As in, you want to complete it with this company. So I think yes. It says, you must sign a bit of paper saying yes, you do want to complete it. I was like, why can't that just be, if you tick this box, you are signing that you accept. Do you know what I mean? So now I've got to physically upload a document. So I phoned him. So and that's where he told me, that's what you've got to do, write a letter and then sign it and send it and upload it. I was like, oh, that's just nonsense.
2023.
Yeah. But then I said, all right. So I said, what? So I've got a summary sheet of what he's qualified. I need to obviously get him graded. And he's like, oh, we don't accept summary sheets. I was like, well, that makes sense. And this is certificates. I said, that makes perfect sense. So at copies in his JTL tutor, said, look, JRB, ECS don't accept summary sheets and ECS certificates. JTL come back today, said, don't issue certificates.
What?
He wants completion of the apprenticeship. I was like, and how do we go back to the JRB ECS and get an appropriate grading? I'm waiting for that response. And I just thought, I can't be the only person who's come, because obviously the JRB grade, you have stage one to four apprenticeship route.
Mm.
So how does one, if the JRB is saying they need to see certificates, JTL is saying they don't issue certificates till completion, how does a JRB apprentice evidence progression through the four stages of an apprenticeship?
Yeah, and how, when they change employment, which is very common at the minute, how do they make that work? That doesn't make sense whatsoever. I know my apprentices, they get a certificate from the training provider every few months or so as they complete units off to map their progress. It's good for them, as in a way, to get a bit of acknowledgement for the effort they've made. But in the times that they might need to swap employment, you're going to need it. That doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Doesn't make any sense. I've just checked. I've got a reply from him. So he says here, I'm not sure if Liam's former company, oh, I shouldn't say his name, sorry. I'm not sure if his former company was part of the JRB determination scheme. Regardless, he's still part of the ECS. He would have needed an ECS card. I've just said that. The firms that we deal with generally go by yearly progression of the student, i.e. year one, two, three, etc. And then the final year. And this is backed up by a termly progression report, see attached. At this time, he's on target to complete. So the JTL electrical tutor is saying he's on target to complete. But further on, back in the email, he's not even started his MVQ. So if there's four stages in apprenticeship, and he's saying he's on stage three, on target to complete, he's saying that he's got 1 year to complete his MVQ. Oh, I think that's quite a tall order. Personally, what do I know? But I think 1 year to do a full MVQ portfolio is going to be challenging.
That tends to be what a lot of colleges pitch it at, but that's what most people find. It's often much longer than that, which is why it's important to start collecting evidence as soon as you can, be it photographs, witness statement, little videos, whatever you're doing, collect as much as you can to get bits of that covered off, because it's not
especially
easy.
Especially the low-hanging fruit, the risk assessments, the little things you could do each day and day out. I'll change the switch. I'll just do minor work certificate, that sort of stuff. Just get them stuff early on, because trying to build up portfolio from scratch on year four is just a bit of nonsense. You should have, I think by the time you get to year four, you should be at least 50% done of your portfolio, ready to just sort of polish it and draw it up and make it look nice. But
no, it's true. At least the pictures of the PPE and containment going in and all basics along those lines, and then pad it out in your last year at a technical level, I guess is maybe then the fairest way of putting it. But that is really bad experience. And I've had lots and lots of messages coming in these last few days of people losing their jobs. So there's a lot of people changing employment. Really? Yeah, it's really taking off again in that way, which is not good to see. I know from speaking with Sam about employment of agency electricians, they've seen a massive fall off at that level as well. So it is a bit of a worry. I don't know how you're seeing things out in the day job. We're doing okay, but the things I'm seeing from wider industry are pretty poor, to be honest.
We're so busy, but the flip side is once industry starts free-falling in terms of available work, then labour floods the market and then rate goes down. That's the danger, isn't it? You know what I mean? So people start, then £25 an hour rates on agencies start becoming £22.50, then start becoming £20, then £17.50, and you start going, oh, that is terrible. Like, you know what I mean? You think the JRB rates are around about 18, 20 quid an hour minimum. So you're not getting anyone decent for less than a score an hour. It's just not happening.
Nah, I don't know quite what is or isn't. Yeah, it is. It's supply and demand, isn't it, on everything? And like you said, if that supply and demand equation changes, the rate will follow suit. It's just what happens in a capitalist arrangement of people drawing a salary at the end of the day. And it is a bit of a worry. I think the agency sector is often like the canary to the coal mines. So what's seen there first kind of filters its way back through to other sectors as things change. I know a lot of the house builders have cut back on what they're building for 2024, and some of these big infrastructure projects, I think the government have kind of covertly cut back on a lot of those as well. So I don't know, we'll have to see. It's a scary one though at the minute.
Yeah, it is. I think it's the warm-up and a scary one maybe. I feel like next year could be challenging in the rail. We've got a new control period. So railway's done in control periods. Next control period is CP7. I feel like it could be some hard times in CP7. Obviously, they're going through all these redundancies and false redundancies and pay packets and the strikes and all that sort of stuff, and that's going to have an ongoing effect. The thing is, the railway is so dilapidated, so old. You know what I mean? We talk about Victorian times sometimes. These places were built and you're firefighting a lot trying to keep things running and start cutting costs. At what cost does that cost cutting come out? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, you see a lot of these posts on social media of these great projects that are going on in rail, and you think, wow, that's amazing. But then you go and walk around some train stations in the rail world, and they're awful. They're really bad, like lacking in investment for decades.
Yeah, and I think contractors have got to take some responsibility for that, because I don't think contractors always have the best interest of the client. And, you know, you've got to highlight these things and try and do the best. They do have quite a rigorous maintenance regime. We do highlight quite a lot of work, but it's got to be funded from somewhere, and it can be a challenge, you know, it can be a real challenge, but you've got to do your job as a contractor and just try and package it up as accurately and assess it as bias risk and present it to the client properly, as we should all do in all our jobs. I do feel like the contractors out there that go direct to consumer will be in a decent position. I think people working around people's houses directly, I think, will be all right.
Yeah, I think certainly with the drive we seem to be on with renewables and stuff as well, there's always going to be work at that level. But we'll see. None of us have got that crystal ball. I wish we did. We could have foresight and make even more money, but we don't have that privilege. You just got to keep going.
Yeah, no. I think on that note, we'll call it a day.
I've enjoyed chatting. We've covered a lot of ground in that one. You need to go and get busy and get them cables chopped in the wall.
So what have I got up there? I've got a ring main, smoke alarm, two lighting circuits. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Ring main, smoke alarm. It should be 2 smoke alarms. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Why do I feel like there's a cable missing?
That's always the worry on every rewire. There's something you've left out somewhere.
There definitely should be 2 3 corners for the smokes. I don't know what's going on there. Maybe
at least you've realised before you've plastered it back up. How have you been getting on with your wall chaser before we end it? I know you got one. Has it gone all right, that thing?
Yeah, wall chaser is epic, absolutely epic. But it's just a boxing that I need to do now. But that's a good thing about the Lutron. I need to put light switches in because these are all kinetic light switches. So yes.
That saves a lot of work.
Yeah. I was sort of in my mind, should I just put a box in and conjure it up just in case? But I was like,
nah.
Technology is only going to improve. If this is what's available now, we're not going to go backwards, are we? You know what I mean? So
just wait for the next Corrigendum when they ban kinetic switching.
But the good thing is with the Lutron, you can see what's coming. So because they tend to release in the States many years before. The UK, and they've got a recently installed RAR3 Select in America. It won't be here for a few years, but that's all backwards compatible. So you can start part upgrading, which is really, I think that's how people should be doing things. You know what I mean? Properly, like making sure you ain't got to update your whole fucking, your whole bloody system. You know? I don't care anyway. I'm not on YouTube. Who gives a shit? But yeah. Ah, I'm going to try and put this out on Twitter, this one. So I might try and do this one as the first one.
I saw you say that. How do you even do that?
I don't know at the moment. So I've just gone for me approved status and paid for it to see how that goes out. I think that gives you access to like longer videos formats to upload. So I'll have a little play and see how that comes out. So
is that different to Twitter Blue then? Because I think that's half an hour.
That's what I meant. Sorry, Twitter Blue. That's what I meant. Yeah, I thought it was 90 minutes. I might be wrong, but I could always...
I think you're right. Maybe 90 minutes on a laptop and half an hour if you're uploading from a phone. There's some differences between the two for whatever reason.
Yeah. So, So I'll see how that goes and see how it comes in. Because I don't really care about seeing the figures. It's nice to see the figures. I don't care, though. I just want to get it out there as much as possible. And if it's easier for people to watch on Twitter, I don't think they will. They probably won't. I don't know is the honest answer. So I thought there's another platform. See how it goes.
Yeah, at least they can drop a comment in telling us how wrong we are about everything.
That is the one thing I miss from YouTube, is that sort of discussion point.
You don't get that on Spotify, do you?
No, you don't get that. So I think it is available to do it, but people just don't use it that way, do they?
Nah.
It's just not the right platform. Where Twitter is I don't care what you say, it's the best debating platform. If you want to have a debate about something and talk about something, you will get a wealth of experience popping up, especially in the electrical industry, and I think it's the best platform for that. So maybe it'll create some cracking debate.
Hopefully, by far. I totally agree.
All right, mate. We'll catch up soon.
Yeah, catch you soon, mate.
Take care, everyone. Bye.
Bye-bye.